This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Accelerate your day with today's business headlines with Volvo Cars.
Good morning, I'm Sharad Kutin. With me, Melissa Edris, and time to look at the big business stories of the day. We begin with the front page of The Edge. It has ECRL concerns very similar to Hambantota, says a China communications construction company. So this is a story basically with the CCCC in our Malaysian-owned, one of these big infrastructure projects, the ECRL, the East Coast Railway, making reference to a Sri Lankan port project called Hambantota, and saying that while it's very similar, they think there are important differences.
That's right. So people who built, the contractor for Hambantota project is the China Harbour Engineering Company, which is a subsidiary of the CCC. So essentially, they're talking about the similarities between the two projects, but they're saying, look, while there are similarities, they're not too concerned about the risks. They think that the ECRL project will, in the long term, benefit more Malaysians. But I do find this interesting, Sharad, because there are similarities when you look at what's happened in Sri Lanka or the Sri Lankan experience with the Malaysian experience. There are similarities, but there are also important differences.
Yeah, I think, to put this in context, Hambantota as a port project that involved the Chinese in a foreign country was used and has been used for over a year now to illustrate some of the problems involved in China's ambitious One Road, One Belt initiative, right? And with regard to port development, we know that this is an issue around China's both business and economic interest in it, but also strategic interest. Now, with the Hambantota port, what you had was a project that was supposed to be in the hands of the Sri Lankans ending up under the control of the Chinese because the debts that Sri Lanka had to take on were unsustainable.
That's right. So when the Sri Lankan president Mahinda Rajapaksa was voted out of office, I think it was 2015, the new government that took over, they just really struggled to make payments on the debt that he had taken on, or his previous administration had taken on. So there was months of negotiation with the Chinese, and finally last December, Sri Lanka had to hand over this port. It was the port, and it was about 15,000 acres of land to the Chinese for a lease of 99 years. So essentially almost a century. Now, what this did was give China control of territory, not just of a few hundred miles of the shores of India, which is a rival market, but also gave China a strategic foothold in what is seen to be a really important waterway, both commercially and through a military aspect. I believe I saw reports recently that the Chinese submarines are already seen in that waterway. So they've wasted no time.
Yeah, and some of the criticisms around what is being called debt diplomacy actually emanates from analysts in India. Now, the Indians have concerns around the geostrategic value of these port developments in relation to their security needs. So what you note if you look at the map is that the port developments in Bangladesh, if you look at that, on the eastern coast of India, then you have Sri Lanka in the south, and then you have Pakistan in the west. So in some ways, India is being encircled by these Chinese interests. Now, one does not have to take the Indian perspective on this, but it's still worth noting that the debate around debt diplomacy, which is that China purposefully, knowingly gets into these agreements with the idea that the countries taking on these debts will find it unsustainable, and so then they can deal for other or parlay that into other strategic interests.
Yeah, I've read criticism towards this Belt and Road Initiative about China's global investment plan being a debt threat. So as you say, debt diplomacy, other more harsh critics call it a debt trap for more vulnerable economies, right? Because at the end of the day, China is really no ordinary investor. When they come and invest in your country, it really isn't like a typical private sector investment from, say, the US or Europe. You're dealing with mostly state-owned enterprises, heavy government involvement. So it's not apples for apples comparison. There has to be, I guess, some You know, you have to kind of look at it through a different lens, so to speak. I believe it was the founding father of America, John Adams, who said that the way to subjugate a country is either through the sword or through debt. So,
oh, right. You know, there's also the other dimension to it, which is the nature of the political systems of these countries, right? So Rajapaksa was, in fact, an authoritarian leader, but Sri Lanka is nominally democratic. And what you had in that instance was Maithripala Sirisena, who's actually was a member of the Rajapaksa administration, leaving it, dissenting, and then winning the election. So maybe kind of unexpected. You also have in Bangladesh a fairly authoritarian leader there with Sheikh Hasina leading the Awami League, almost completely obliterating any kind of opposition to her, namely the Bangladesh National Party, BNP. So, again, authoritarian leaders, very good for stability, apparently, for China, because then it deals with somebody they know that's going to be in power for some time.
For a while, yeah.
For a while. And maybe the character of vulnerable, rather compromised administrations or compromised political leaders, plus their ability to hold on to power regardless, might have been something that China assumed in many of these deals.
Well, so how do we look at the similarities and the differences between this project, between the Hambantota project, a port with, the ECRL, right? Both Sri Lanka and Malaysia had seen changes in government, so that could change the terms of negotiation with China. For Sri Lanka, I believe the project was too far gone to kind of backtrack on. The compensation costs would have been astronomical. But for the ECRL, is that the same case? I mean, were we able to kind of pivot and relook at some of the contracts that perhaps we felt may not have been well defined?
Yeah, I mean, it might be one of those situations where we're more leveraging power than the Sri Lankans. That needs to be, investigated, because China's interests in us might go beyond the specifics, right? And maybe long term, China will be more willing to renegotiate these deals, you know, whether through, you know, its private contractors or through its state-owned enterprises, because they have a longer-term interest in Malaysia, which might give us some leverage.
Well, the other big story that we're looking at this morning is the fact that tomorrow, Sharad, is the deadline for Bank Negara for foreign insurers to submit a plan to show that they have made at least some progress in their divestment plan. This is all to comply with a local rule on ownership, which sets a cap at 70% for foreign ownership of local insurance businesses. So
I wonder whether the new governor, Dato' Noor Samsiah Mohamed Yunus, she takes over on the 1st of July, whether this will have any material effect on Bank Negara policies. Are we seeing essentially continuity with Bank Negara in terms of foreign insurance?
Well, that's certainly the expectation of analysts as she comes into office next week. But, you know, with this foreign ownership, the cap on foreign ownership for foreign insurers, initially, I think it was as recent as a week ago or so, that sources were saying, well, you know what, it's likely that Malaysia will have to review this directive because there's a new government, there's too much in transition. There's a new government, there's a new governor. So whether foreign insurers are struggling to find local investors who can buy up these stakes, I mean, there are very few investors with that kind of money. You're talking about perhaps a handful, and most of them, if not both of them, are the pension funds, essentially. So the idea was perhaps to give the foreign insurers a little bit extra time to find the best value to divest this
stake. Right. So to come back to the expectation, the deadline is for them to submit plans.
Yes.
So a plan is very different from saying, well, we've actually succeeded.
Yeah.
Right. So it's not that the ownership issue needs to be resolved by the 1st of July. It's simply that they show sincerity, perhaps a serious plan to achieve that role.
And some of the companies that must divest include Prudential, Great Eastern, Tokio Marine and Zurich. And Prudential is said to have filed for a potential listing of its Malaysian unit. So that's something we're keeping a close eye on.
Okay, we're coming up to the top of the hour. We'll have the news and then we'll be back with the opening numbers in the stock market and more news and analysis. Stay tuned. BFM 89.9.
Fuel your business drive with the Volvo S90 T8 twin engine. So cost efficient, it makes good business sense. Volvo, made by Sweden.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.